data center cooling can represent a significant portion of a facility's power consumption. So it's no surprise that over the last few years, we've seen a sharpened focus on metrics such as power usage effectiveness to help data centers gauge how much of their utility power is lost to supporting infrastructure. In many climates, data center managers can help reduce these cooling costs by leveraging outside environmental conditions to cool IT equipment. Under the right conditions, these technologies can save so much in electricity costs that we often call it free cooling. Hello, I'm Nick Martin, Assistant Site Editor for SearchDataCenter.com, and in this podcast I'm speaking with Bob McFarlane, a principal in charge of data center design for Shen, Milsom, and Wilkie, to find out more about these so-called free cooling technologies. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure to work with TechTarget.
So what are the types of free cooling technologies available, and what are the pros and cons of each?
Well, there are really three types of free cooling. Airside, which is what people think of first, where outside air is brought into the data center either directly through filters or indirectly through heat exchangers. Adiabatic, which is a variation on airside cooling. The air is brought through some sort of a chamber that uses water evaporation to cool the air before it enters the data center, so it's really a form of airside cooling. And waterside, where the cooling medium, which is usually water or glycol, circulates directly through cooling towers rather than through chillers or compressors. As far as pros and cons are concerned, it can get a little complicated. I'll try to simplify it. Waterside is probably the easiest. The majority of data centers use chilled water or condenser water in their cooling system, so it's logical to use waterside free cooling because the liquid and piping and cooling towers are already in the plan. That makes the additional cost relatively small. Power for pumps and cooling towers is still required, of course, but it's deceptively easy in concept. Use a valve to redirect the coolant around the chiller and through the cooling tower. The problem is the changeover. You don't want to change from free cooling to refrigerant cooling for short amounts of time because short-cycling compressors and turning them on and off is not good. Manual changeovers are supposedly simple, but they actually get rather involved, and they end up in many cases being considered a pain that's not worth the effort, so the system's put in and never used. Automated controls, of course, solve that problem, but they can get complex, and they need a fairly wide window to ensure that the system doesn't go changing back and forth. So there may be conditions where the outside air temperature seems fine for free cooling, but you don't want it to suddenly, the sun comes out and the system switches back to refrigerant and then back to free cooling. So you put this wide window in the automated system, and therefore you don't get as many hours as you might otherwise be able to. So there's no simple answer to all of this. Now, airside free cooling is even more deceptively easy than waterside because you actually get people who think they can just virtually open the window, so to speak, and let the cool air in. The problems are multiple. Air volumes are very large, approximately 160 cubic feet per minute per kilowatt, and that's at a velocity of 2,500 feet per minute, which is about 2,800 miles an hour. So the air is really flying through the ductwork. That means that a 250 kW data center would take 40,000 CFM of air. That's a 2-by-8-foot opening to get the air through without considering losses. 1 megawatt data center would take like a 4-by-15-foot opening just to get the air into the data center. That's a big hole, and that's big ductwork. But the real difficulty with airside free cooling is the air quality. Even clean air requires filtering. Filters reduce the airflow. They require fan energy to pull the air through them. They get dirty. They require cleaning or replacement. Outdoor conditions determine how often that has to happen, and the labor to do that, and the filters have a price tag. Humidity also has to be controlled. The best air cooling conditions are generally in lower humidity. Humidification takes energy for evaporation, so if you have to humidify the air, you have to use some energy. But high humidity requires dehumidification, and that takes mechanical refrigeration, or in some cases a desiccant, to absorb the moisture and to get rid of it. Mechanical refrigeration, which is what we're trying to reduce the use of, uses a lot of energy, and desiccants require replacement. So there's no simple answer to all of this. And adiabatic cooling is a variation of airside cooling, which, as I said, uses evaporation. So it's usable only really in lower humidity environments, but it can significantly extend the hours of free cooling. So there's a lot to consider in deciding what to use and how to use it.
All right. What do administrators need to consider regarding free cooling management?
Well, really, this comes down to whether or not facilities is capable of handling the type of system you choose, because even if you control facilities or facilities as part of IT, facilities people are going to get involved in big mechanical systems. So do they understand the changeover requirements and parameters? Do you have control or do they? If the outside air temperature starts to climb, can they react fast enough? Is the changeover system too complicated? As I said, manual systems may fall into disuse and automatic systems may fail or even shut down cooling and be abandoned. So I would say the main thing administrators have to consider is their facility side.
What are the free cooling costs and return on investment?
Oh, boy, that's a major it depends. Condenser water systems with economizer coils are probably the least capital cost. You can order air conditioners with economizer coils. It doesn't add a lot to the cost of the air conditioner. Your cooling towers exist. You may have to add heaters to the cooling towers if you're in below freezing climates, but none of that is really major expense. Chiller plants become more complex if you're using a chilled water system. Manual changeover systems are relatively inexpensive, of course, but we've said they may be a problem to use. Automatic changeover systems are going to cost more. Airside systems have significant capital costs if you're using the heat exchanger systems, which are frankly the more recommended. Trying to pull air through a bunch of major filters really isn't the best approach. The Kyoto wheel, which is an air-to-air heat exchanger, is a big, large diameter, slowly rotating wheel heat exchanger that is gaining popularity and is pretty well proven now. And APC has brought a device to market called the EcoBreeze that combines adiabatic cooling with a chiller and a changeover system. So it's not truly complete airside, but it has all of the automation built into it. But these are large physical systems, and they carry a high capital cost. So the return on investment depends on location, climate, and the effectiveness of the controls. What percent of the year can you run without mechanical refrigeration? Will the changeover process significantly reduce this time? As I said, with automatic systems, they may not react to all of the times that you could use free cooling. And it depends on your electrical costs. The higher the power cost, of course, the potentially faster the return on investment. If most of your free cooling time is at night, are your power costs lower at night? A lot of areas have different power costs depending on time of day, and nighttime is usually the least expensive. And very important, what's your operating temperature? Are you following ASHRAE TC9.9's recommendation, which now is up to 27 degrees Celsius or 80.6 degrees Fahrenheit inlet temperatures to your equipment? If you're doing that, those temperatures, that envelope was set to allow you to use more hours, more days of the year of free cooling. So if you're doing that, then your return on investment may be a lot shorter than if you're still trying to run at low temperatures into your equipment.
So are these free cooling options suitable for data center retrofit, or are they only practical and cost-effective if they are integrated into a new build?
Well, water-cooled data centers may be retrofittable. It depends on the design. If it's water-cooled, it may be practical, but it will probably be disruptive or even cause a shutdown because unless you have totally redundant systems, you're cutting into chilled water lines or condenser water lines and stopping your cooling flow. Airside is almost certainly restricted to new builds. It would probably be terribly disruptive to put openings of that size and ductwork of that size into an existing facility unless you can segment the facility and create a clean module in part of your large data center and retrofit that. Also depends on the type of the existing cooling design. The outside air has to be brought in to some kind of air distribution system. And that usually means large ducts rather than underfloor. And if the ducts don't exist, retrofit with ducts of that size is going to be a major undertaking. So I would have to say that free cooling is probably going to be much, much, much more practical in new builds than in retrofits.
Do you see more data centers adopting free cooling in the future?
Well, most new data center projects at least tell us that they want to consider free cooling. It's often driven by the pursuit of LEED certification or the desire for energy savings or a green corporate philosophy, and sometimes it's just curiosity because the term free cooling floats around as a buzzword and not everybody really knows what it means or what's involved in it. But the real big deal here now is going to be that ASHRAE 90.1, which is code in many jurisdictions, that means it's a requirement, not an option. The new ASHRAE 90.1 is going to eliminate the present exceptions for data centers. It's going to require free cooling be included in the designs of data centers, period. If 90.1 is adopted as part of the environmental code in your jurisdiction, and the chances are it probably is, then and it may be even adopted nationally, then you're going to have to incorporate free cooling into a data center design, and 90.1 does not take mission criticality into account. So you're not going to be able to argue that it might reduce your reliability, which you used to be able to do. So, yes, we're going to see free cooling adopted in data centers almost universally as time goes on.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank Bob McFarland for joining us. I'm Nick Martin, and you can learn more about data center cooling at searchdatacenter.com.